The Weekend Set List with Jeff Leiker. This is your stop for live music, art, theater, and other performances. If it's happening in the area, it's happening on The Weekend Set List.
Welcome back to The Weekend Set List. This is your host, Jeff Leiker, your one-stop shop for art, music, performances, and other entertainment in the listening area. I'm joined in the studio with Brett Strait of Kindred. How are you doing today, Brett?
I am well. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing just fine, and it's really good to meet you officially now, because for the longest time, you were the guy with the epic beard that would make my beef and cream cheese pizza at LaMotto.
Absolutely.
So now it's good to have a name and a face put together here, and your reputation actually precedes you a little bit. When I was talking to some of my coworkers about who I was having come in, pretty much a lot of them knew you. James Bell of the KAYS Morning Show, Joe Lohmeyer, one of our marketing guys. And so I got kind of a crash course on who you were a little bit more. But for those people who are listening, how about you give us a quick VH1 behind the music kind of overview of your music career?
Yeah, absolutely. So I picked up a microphone about 31 years ago with some friends of mine from high school.
Mm-hmm. That's usually
things kind of took off from there through college or whatnot. We became a little bit more professional, recorded our first album in 1995, mm-hmm. Second one in 96, another one in 98, and then the last one in 2000. We moved to Fort Worth, Texas in 1998, signed with an independent record label out of Dallas, Texas called Last Beat Records. Mm-hmm. At any rate, so yeah, like 31 years ago, I've accomplished a lot of things. There was about a 10-year hiatus that I didn't really have a lot to do with music.
Sure.
One of the guys that I give it a lot of credit to kind of get me the itch to do it again was Jordan Romy, mm-hmm. who we'll be playing with March 4th at the Brass Rail.
Yeah, Action Boys
with the
and
Action
Kindred.
Boys, yeah. Yeah.
And did you know Kindred? I always like to try and find like my guests' work before they come in so I don't look like I'm completely completely ignorant on everything. Found Action Boys on Spotify. Really good hardcore punk stuff. Kindred, the only thing that would come up is a DJ spelled the exact same name or
really?
The exact same way, but I couldn't find out where they were from or anything like that. But it's apparently just an EDM DJ. He's got a Facebook page and everything like that, but I couldn't find anything online.
Okay, so to back up a little bit.
Sure.
So the band that I played with was Grin.
Mm.
And so cut a record 95, 96, 97, sorry, 98 and 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new project. We kind of started in 2020 when the lockdown happened.
Okay.
It was kind of a product of, I need something for my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And so we
performing really is therapy, but in group session, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's strange because the guys that I'm playing with in Kindred, and again, we don't have any original music that's out at this
gotcha.
Point.
Sure.
It's something that we're working on. But the reason that we kind of came up with that name was because the drummer just turned 21. His name's Ethan Shantz. I actually went to college with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm 47 years old. Mm-hmm. His dad and I went to Ozfest in 1998 together. So that's kind of where our relationship was born. I have a daughter that is about 6 months younger than Ethan.
Yeah.
So at any rate, 21. And then I believe Nevin Truen is 27, Nick Schleyer is 33, I'm 47, and I think our bass player will turn, he's 48 right now, but he'll turn 49
mm-hmm.
in April. So you've got a little bit of a spread in regards to
there's
different
a generation
influences,
gap,
different
will, yeah.
generations along those lines, and it's great. It's fun to be involved with music again, and again, I forgot how therapeutic it was for me being
mm-hmm.
that 10-year hiatus. Now, on the flip side of things, and during that 10-year period of time, we did a reunion show in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
When that happened, it kind of gave me the itch again.
Yeah.
But it was looking more so from just being on the engineering side, production side a little bit.
Sure.
So I purchased some recording equipment, have a little studio that I've set up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've worked with some various artists, including Jordan Romy from the Action Boys. We recorded their album,
mm-hmm.
I think it was 4 years ago. And then we've done some independent stuff that Jordan did solo on.
Okay.
And so I had the opportunity to do some backup vocals on some of his records
yeah.
and whatnot. And I was really blessed to be able to have that opportunity. But if Jordan Romy and I hadn't crossed paths, I don't know if I would have got the itch to be inspired to be able to do it again. So I give him a lot of credit for inspiring me to get yeah. back involved with it.
Or maybe the itch was maybe always there, but I kind of feel like as far as like, especially in rock and roll music, like the old guard is still around. You know, you still have like Henry Rollins, David Byrne from the Talking Head, they're all still doing music now, but it's almost kind of, I don't think it's embarrassing. I still love it. But like of like from the youth culture looking at it right now, it feels embarrassing. Like, especially when you get like someone like Vince Neil, Motley Crue, looking like the Bumble from the Rudolph stop motion animation movie and everything. There's like a recording of him online on YouTube, just completely forgetting the words to one of their songs and just kind of like mumbling through it or something like that.
I'd like to say that's never happened to me.
I mean, depending on how many drinks you're in or anything like that. I mean, I've blanked on sets before because I'm a stand-up comedian too.
Okay.
I've done some sets where it's like, all right, I'm going to do 30 minutes and then I get 10 minutes into my set and I'm like, where was I going with any of this? I guess I'm just going to wrap it up and, you know, do a 10-minute set instead of a 30-minute. So we've all been there. There's stage amnesia or something like that. But that, to kind of springboard off of that, do you kind of feel, especially with having younger members in your band, I personally feel that like rock and roll is not dead. It's never going to die. But I feel like it's gone more towards where it should be, which is the live element. Because like if you listen to like mainstream rock and roll, and I'm using air quotes for those of you who can't see, it's kind of bloated. It's kind of overproduced in a way. And there's just something about just the rawness. And that's kind of where like Nirvana was such a spark in the early 90s, was because, you know, you had like hair metal bands with a lot of theatrics and a lot of pomp and circumstance. And then you have Nirvana coming up from the underground thrash and punk scene, just completely uplifting it and giving like this kind of almost silent majority in that scene a voice. For a roundabout way of asking, do you feel like that's kind of what Kindred could probably represent in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I've always, one of the things that was important to me when I first started getting into the recording studio was that I'd been to concerts that, you know, I'd heard the album, it was great, see them play live, and they didn't replicate what they were, you know, putting out in the studio.
Sure.
Which was a little frustrating. So for me, it was always important when I got into the recording studio that, hey, when we go play it live, let's make sure we can replicate that sound.
Right.
And I certainly think that that's an element that we're bringing into play is when we're ready to start recording that original material, let's just make sure that what we're bringing, you know, into the studio is going to be something we replicate live. So I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, but I mean, I think that you know, I mean, for me, there's not a difference.
Okay.
It was always that, you know, the studio and the live version should be the same.
Okay. Yeah, I guess to put the question a little bit differently there, as far as like especially having younger members in your band who are obviously probably fans of music like this, we kind of don't give kids too much credit per se. Like, you know, especially working in top 40 radio when you got to broadcast what is on the Billboard Hot 100. Like that's our focus kind of thing. And I feel like there's still a lot of kids there who love old school punk, metal, everything along those lines. They still gravitate towards that rock and roll sound, but maybe aren't exposed to it as much. That's basically the question is, do you feel kind of the same way about that?
I feel that we're giving ourselves the opportunity to be able to expose kids to that rock and roll. That I'm from a different generation too, so it's not necessarily easy for me to relate and be like, yeah, I understand where these kids are coming from.
Right.
I know where my roots are, and any opportunity that I have to be able to expose somebody to where those roots are, regardless of what generation they are, I think that's something we can do. So again, I'm bouncing around the question, but I'm just not entirely sure if I'm wrapping my head around exactly what you're getting at, but...
That's fair.
Yeah.
You sound like my wife now, so okay. I get that. We'll go to some easy questions then, or maybe not like so esoteric questions.
Okay.
I guess we'll go with that. So every like person who really starts like getting into music or getting into comedy or any kind of performance art, anything like that, they always have that one artist or that one movie if you're a filmmaker, or that one album if you're a musician, or that one comedy special if you're a comedian that really ignites that spark and goes, I want to do this. What is that album for you?
Oh, that's a great question. Tough one. Wish I'd had some time to marinate.
You can give me your top three if that
absolutely
makes it easier.
So I mean, an album for me that certainly was a footprint. Mm-hmm. I guess, if you will, in my life was Pearl Jam's 10 album.
Oh, I'll be honest. I love Nirvana, but I felt like Pearl Jam was the better of the two
of the Seattle footprint.
Exactly. So like Nirvana was just so raw and abrasive, but Pearl Jam could write songs.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and the whole Seattle footprint was something that, like, you know, in the early 90s when I was just finishing up high school. Mm-hmm. Was something that came into play. So you've got Soundgarden, you've got Pearl Jam, you've got Alice in Chains, yep. You've got Nirvana. Mm-hmm. So all four of those bands in their own right had a very huge impact in regards to where I went, developed. And then I got exposed to a little bit more of the heavier, more hardcore kind of music. So you're getting into your Sepulturas and your Panteras there. Yep. So it was an interesting step in regards to what direction, you know, my musical influence kind of directed me towards.
Right.
But I definitely say that the 10 album was definitely one of those that I could still pop in today and listen from start to finish and feel every emotion that I felt when I first listened to it.
Yeah.
I call them audiographs, you know, it takes me back.
Oh, yeah. There's studies where it's like music is tied to memories more so than it's like music and smells are like the two big things that tie you back to memories. I was in high school when I discovered Pearl Jam, because, like, you know, when you're like in middle school or something like that, you kind of listen to what your parents are listening to and whatever's on the radio at that point. And like when I discovered Pearl Jam, to me, the underdog song from that album and the one that like will just wrench me is Release, the album closer. That one will bring me to tears almost every single time that I listen to it. So it's a solid album from back to front. I love it so much.
And front to back.
Yeah. So you can find the subliminal messages, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Exactly. So, do you have any other albums that really grab you?
You know, the it was funny because I remember when Sepultura came out with their Roots album.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was 98, ballpark around there.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter was when Sepultura disbanded and Soulfly came into existence, and then Sepultura got a new lead singer, kind of went their way. But
yeah,
the Roots album, the tribal sound and percussion that they had behind that was something that has definitely been a big imprint in my life as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, throughout the course of time, there's been so many albums and you know, that I've collected and listened to that have definitely influenced me. But in regards to kind of like what you would refer to maybe as the alternative music phase and then like the hardcore heavy metal kind of phase. Those two albums are there.
Yeah.
Trying to think if there might be a third one that kind of ties in and relates to what we're doing and what we're talking about.
Sure.
But in the meantime, while I ponder upon that, what are we getting at to? Maybe I'll circle back to that in a minute.
Well, you did bring up Pantera and was talking to James Bell. He had mentioned that you had either opportunity or you did get a chance to work with a guitarist. And he's like, some guitarist that, you know, got shot on stage or something like that. And I'm like, Dimebag Darrell? Is that what he's, is that?
So, I mean, obviously we relocated to Fort Worth, Texas in 1998. Mm-hmm. And one of the first places that we played was called the Tattoo Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his fiance girlfriend Rita owned the hair salon that was right next door to the tattoo bar. One of the first shows that we played there, towards the end of the night, Dime comes in. We do a black tooth grin shot.
Oh, nice.
With Dime. And he was a little inebriated at the time, so sure. It wasn't like he's going to remember a lot of it or whatnot. But yeah, it was just funny because one of the albums that we did listen to, Cowboys from Hell, I believe that came out in 1990. So just to have the opportunity, you know, 8 years later to kind of be able to rub elbows with somebody who was a huge influence in regards to not necessarily me, but definitely our guitar players, our drummer. That was exhilarating. Then a little bit more history that's kind of involved with that. After we disbanded from Grin, which was in 2001, our guitar player, Ben Bunker, from Grin went on to form another project called Arms of the Sun. And the bass player that they eventually brought in for that project was Rex Brown, who was the bass player from Pantera. So
nice.
When we did our reunion show in 2012, we played at a place called the Rail Club, which was in Fort Worth, Texas. And Rex Brown was actually there, which was when they were celebrating the 20-year reunion of Vulgar Display of Power. So Rex was there. Our drummer went on to play with a guy named Casey James, who took third in American Idol, I believe, in 2000.
12?
I could be wrong on the dates. Memory doesn't serve me so well.
It's all bleeding together.
So at any rate,
at
there were a couple of celebrities that were at our reunion show.
Nice.
I just remember that Rex's bodyguard, actually, when I thanked the club for letting me have my 10-year-old daughter there to come see us perform and play, that his bodyguard was like, you need to go introduce yourself. And so Rex Brown came over and introduced himself to my daughter. And that's one thing she won't forget for a long, long time. But yeah, so we had the opportunity to kind of rub elbows. Mm-hmm. We met Dime, we met Rex, and we met Vinny. I never had the opportunity to meet Phil.
Right.
Once you've kind of adapted and grown into the Dallas and Fort Worth music scene, you've met a lot of people. And one of the bands that we played with, a lot of shows with, was Drowning Pool. And this was with the original singer, Dave Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of great memories from Dallas and Fort Worth. Yeah. And so, again, taking a hiatus from music or whatnot and thinking about all the great memories that I've had.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just meeting the right people. It was like the universe aligns sometimes. And, you know, so I met Nevin. Funny story about Nevin, if you're willing to listen to stories, and I got plenty of time to talk.
Oh, yeah.
I play a lot of disc golf. And so shortly after I moved back in 2015, I was out playing on the course and walking by one of the pavilions, and there was a couple guys playing acoustic guitar. And they sounded really good, but we were doing like a little league competition. So like we'd gone to a playoff, so we had a couple more holes to play. And I walked by and I was like, sounds really good, guys. Played the next hole, circled back around, going to the playoff hole. And these two guys that were playing guitar circled back around, and they're driving in their pickup. And they're like, hey, man, are you Brett Straight? And I was like, yeah, you know? And they're like, my dad used to listen to your music.
Oh, man.
And so it was Ren Temkin and Nevin Truen. And so it's just funny that, you know, from 2015 up until 2020, 5 years later.
Yeah.
And actually playing music with Nevin. So that was my first experience getting to meet him. And it certainly made me feel my place as far as age goes.
But, right.
You know, it's funny that people remember that. And that
right.
there's been a little bit of a legacy that's kind of been established as a result. But
yeah, there is just such a crazy ripple effect with all of that, too. One of the ones that shaped my music palette in high school, when I turned 16 and was able to drive, I immediately went to GB Records with Gary and Mike. You know, I think Creed was like the hugest thing at that point. So I was like, I'm going to get a Creed CD. You know, Creed's okay. I really love Mark Tremonti's guitar playing, but that's beside the point. But then, you know, I get in there and they're like, oh, well, Mike turned me on to like Pink Floyd and Rush, and Gary like really got me into the Beatles in my youth and everything, and the Rolling Stones and whatnot. So it's just kind of that whole ripple effect. I met Yoko Ono in New York when my buddy Albert and I were completely lost in Central Park trying to find Strawberry Fields to get a picture. And we were just walking through. We're two yokels from Kansas. We're like, we'll just go to Central Park. It can't be that big. It is, in fact, that big. we're walking around completely lost, and there's a saxophone player playing by a fountain. And past him, there were some vendors. And it's like, those vendors are here every day. They've got to know. So as we're walking by, there's these two ladies that are throwing money into the saxophone player's cap. And then they turn around, and it's sure enough, it's her with like the big, huge, like, face encompassing sunglasses that she always wears. So we stopped her and asked her for directions. So who better to ask than
right? Yeah.
So
that's great.
So anyway, Action Boys and Kindred at the Brass Rail, and it looks like we're calling this the Heavyweight Over 40 Frontman Showcase.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm a lot older than Romy. He's in his young 40s. I'm kind of closer to 50 than anything else.
I'm closer to 40 than I am 30 now, so I'm kind of right behind you guys. So.
This will be our Hayes debut. We've played a couple of shows in Salina, a couple of shows in the Gorham area. So this will be the first show in Hayes. And obviously, with this being where I was born and raised,
right.
just thought it would be great if we could partner up with another band that was at least in the ballpark. And we kicked that idea around. We're like, yeah, we could call it the 40-plus frontman showcase, showdown, something like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of stuck. And so we rolled with that. So, yeah, it's going to be at the Brass Rail. We're going to be playing in the basement. So March 4th, $5 cover charge.
Yep.
Doors are going to open at 9, probably 9:15, 9:30, somewhere in there. Action Boys are going to kick off. I think they said they got about a 45-minute set. So we got to break down drums and set up stage gear and whatnot. So hopefully by 10:45-ish, Kindred's ready to go on. And
yeah.
and we'll kind of roll from there.
So. I mean, you know, everybody could just show up at 9 and just support both of these local acts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope that everybody does. Yeah. And I'm really expecting a good turnout. Mm-hmm. And just from the idea of, you know, the younger generation up to the people from my generation, they're going to be coming. I think it could be a great turnout.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of talented musicians that have come and been mentored through the Hayes scene and gone on to do some great things.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough when we were playing in high school, our bass player's brother, Brent Normanda, and he happened to play in a band called Apollyon and then later called Zion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guitar players that they had was Dan Weller, who is now the guitar player for Florida Georgia Line.
Right.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, keyboard player,
oh.
Although I think he's getting a little bit more liberty, hopefully being able to
sure.
noodle around on guitar player. He still considers himself to be a guitar player.
Right.
But yeah, so yeah. to look at it from that perspective, when I was a kid growing up here, going to elementary school, there was a guy named Mark and Monty Selby, a couple of brothers, that I very vividly remember coming and playing Puff the Magic Dragon at Roosevelt Elementary School.
I'm a Roosevelt alum, too.
Yeah. And so, you know, to think about Mark going on to Nashville and accomplishing the things that he did as a songwriter and writing songs for Kenny Rayne Shepherd and the Dixie Chicks and, you know, some of the other things like that. So
yeah.
I give mad props to the community of Hayes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's something in the water. I don't know if it's the music teachers. I think it's a very, you know, a lot of different variables that kind of come into play.
Yeah. Or it's something to do.
There's that too.
Could be that.
There's that too.
Yeah, I had an experience with Paramount at the Golden Q a few years ago. As we were walking up, there was a gal that was leaving the venue, and she was that gal, and you know that gal,
okay,
kind of thing. And she's like, you know, just screaming at the top of her lungs, "There's a band! Let's go somewhere else!" And it's like. And I'm like, oh, man, you are missing out. I mean, it was my first time seeing Paramount, and
sure.
this was before their momentum got really going and everything. But there's just something so real and so raw about seeing a local band. And you're not going to hear maybe you will hear the hits, and maybe it'll be not as polished as you're expected to if they're a cover band. It could be some original materials that you don't know the words to. But you should still go out and support them, because every band starts at that moment. And you're going to look back on if they do make it into what we could consider, quote, successful and everything, where you're going to regret not seeing them, not supporting them, not giving them that go-to. And then suddenly you're having to pay $200 a tickets to actually go see them when you couldn't afford a $3 cover charge for it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, I was living down in Texas when they had Singers here in Hayes. Which I think would have been a great experience.
Yeah.
But I had mixed reviews from people in the community that, well, the cover charge is a little too much. But, you know, at the same time, they were bringing
Buck
national
Cherry.
Acts.
They brought Buck Cherry into Hayes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, unfortunately, by the time that I got back and kind of got settled in, that had been something that kind of dissipated a little bit. But,
and the other thing, too, is that I think the pandemic has helped the local music scene a lot more, too, because before the pandemic, you know, there was the let's just stay in and do this or something along those lines, or let's go to just a place just to drink. And that's it. And now, like post pandemic, I kind of feel like we're kind of reigniting that live music scene. My parents would tell me all the time about how it's like, oh, yeah, we saw Molly Hatchet. We saw Fleetwood Mac and they stopped in Hayes. It's like, when is this going to happen again kind of thing?
Right.
So I think it could happen if we, you know, really build up a music scene and, you know, bands like Kindred, Action Boys, Dangerously Biased, Tree Kitty, who we had on here a couple weeks ago.
Miles
well,
on End.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of
great Star Slinger as well and everything. Just all of these groups that that can just really build. And the goal probably isn't to be famous. It's just to get out there and enjoy live music, which is, I'm not even joking, live music is probably the best thing in the world, just getting to experience that.
And, you know, you think about demographically where Hayes is located in between Denver and Kansas City, Omaha, Wichita areas or whatnot. And there's a lot of bands that are coming through this area anyway.
Yeah.
So just to be able to have the opportunity to have the Fox Theater that's opened up now.
Yeah.
Where you're getting the opportunity.
And we're getting some great acts coming through there as well, too. Sunset Sinners is going to record a live album there in April.
With this DOC.
Yeah, with DOC. Yeah.
Yeah. Funny thing about Sunset Center is Chris Brungart, the guitar player, taught our guitar players in Grin how to play guitar. So got to put a little plug in there. He has a website I still called Chops from Hell. If you're looking at how to play guitar, check out Chris Brungart. Great guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and like I said, I mean, we could sit here and we could go back and forth and you're throwing out like names and I'm like, yep. So, yeah, totally, man. Yeah. And it's great. It really is to go out and see a live performance. So much different than listening to an album. Although, I mean, music has its therapy regardless of whether you're listening to a record or whether you're seeing it live. But you definitely feel the energy a little bit more when you're in a live performance, in a live performance setting.
There's a give and take between the band and the audience. And I feel like there probably is some degree if you're watching like Beyonce or Taylor Swift, like doing a choreographed dance number on the stage while lip syncing or not, whatever it is that they do. I don't know. But there's just something about just that rawness of like having a band like.
Yeah. Well, like before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about Cameron Perry.
Yeah.
The first time that I came in contact with Cameron Perry, I was listening to Delivering Pizzas for LaMottos.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, boy, if anybody has the Mother Love Bone album, I could swing it by the studio. I'd love to be able to play it. And I happened to have it in my car. And on a delivery, I swung it by, dropped it off for him, and then I came by and picked it up after work. Now, Mother Love Bone, Andrew Wood, I believe is the singer's name, ended up passing away from heroin overdose.
Right.
The album Temple of the Dog was a tribute to
Andrew
Wood.
Which was Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell's kind of...
Yeah. Collaboration.
Collaboration project.
Yeah. Yeah. So, just kind of thinking about in perspective of just all the different things. But there's a song on there, you got to reach down and pick the crowd up. And so when you're talking about live music, that's certainly one thing that I think artists have to be able to do. But that's also because it's reciprocal from the energy that you're feeling from the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, I've done many a comedy night shows where I'm performing to like three backs from some barflies and like just like the two other comedians, but like that's also been gaining momentum too. I mean, with our comedy gigs, they're getting more and more regular visitors and everything, which means that I'm gonna have to write new jokes now and everything too. So, but it's all like kind of coming out post pandemic, just kind of looping it back around to that. I think. After a year or so of lockdown, I think we're kind of realizing like as a species, just we gotta actually get out there and get connected again because we've spent so much time getting disconnected from each other.
Right. And you know, it's just something else to piggyback off of what you're talking about in regards to the impacts that the pandemic had. Is it, you know, sometimes in different music scenes, and obviously there's only been two that I've been involved with, it was local Round Hayes down in Dallas and Fort Worth. And sometimes it feels like it's competition, and it shouldn't feel like competition. Mm-hmm. It should be camaraderie.
Yeah.
And once you establish that camaraderie, regardless of whether you're playing country music or whether you're playing heavy metal, you know, that's something that you just have an appreciation for.
Yeah.
The fact that it takes a lot to be able to be a musician, to be a songwriter, and to be able to take the time to set up and organize all these events and concerts and performances that you're doing in addition to paying your bills, working another job.
Yeah. I mean, $5 is cheaper than a value meal at McDonald's or Burger King, just saying, you know, and you get, you know, you eat a burger in like 10 minutes versus, you know, you get like 4 hours of entertainment for $5.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, when we started this project, I was like, I don't really have anything left to prove. And I don't want that to sound cocky or conceited or anything
of
those lines. But, you know, if I'm lucky, I'm at halftime in my life.
Right.
You know, but if there's anything that I can do to contribute to a younger individual, a younger musician's opportunities to be able to be a stepping stone, that's what I'm all about. You know, and I really am blessed to play with some very talented guitar players, drummer, bass player. And somehow, you know, my mediocre vocals can...
It's doing something.
Yeah.
We were talking about how like the stars aligned and you know, the planets align and everything like that. Rob Paulson, who is the voice of Yakko from Animaniacs, he's a voice actor. He's also Pinky from Pinky and the Brain, all that jazz and everything. But he has a regular podcast that I listen to because I was also working on being a voice actor for a while too. He had a quote that just has stuck with me. He goes, "There's no such thing as luck. It's when opportunity meets preparedness." that's what luck is opportunity meets preparedness.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
That kind of like motivated me because I was, you know, for a while there, you know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people could kind of feel this way where it's like, man, if I was just so lucky enough to like just have this opportunity to do, it's like you make the opportunity or the opportunity meets. But if you get that opportunity, are you prepared enough for it?
Yeah, I completely relate to that. It's a great quote.
Yeah. So, well, Brett Strait, thank you so much for stopping in and visiting with us on the weekend set list. Don't forget Action Boys and Kindred at the Brass Rail on March 4th at 9 p.m. $5 cover charge. Remember, that's cheaper than a value meal at McDonald's and Burger King. It's the heavyweight over 40 frontman showdown. Brett, thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
All right. Thank you much. All right. More of the weekend set list after this.
You're listening to the Weekend Setlist with host Jeff Liker. More with Jeff on the way, but for more on the events we're talking about today and others, visit HayesPost.com. Look for the announcements section towards the bottom of the page. That's HayesPost, your home for news and events. And now for more Weekend Setlist with host Jeff Liker.
Welcome back to the Weekend Setlist Extended Play, found only here at HayesPost.com. The uncut interview with Brett Strait. Sometimes when music aficionados get together, the conversation can get a little long. Some more happenings in the listening area this weekend. On Friday, March 4th at 8 p.m., it's live music with Brad Dawson and friends at the Paisley Pear. We want to talk about going way back. His son, Matt, helped me pick out my first guitar when I was a freshman in high school and taught me a couple of things on the instrument. And of course, don't forget Action Boys and Kindred live at the Brass Rail at 9 p.m. in Hayes. And on Saturday, the Hayes Community Theater is having an open casting call for their production, A Radical Midsummer Night's Dream. This is a fun twist on the classic Shakespeare comedy. It's a 1980s rendition, complete with 1980s dialogue and wardrobe. There are 13 to 20 roles and a mixture of male and female available, range 14 to 99. That's from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Hayes Community Theater on 8th Street. If you have an itch to get on stage for a local theater production, that is one of the many opportunities to do so. Then at the Fox Theater, it's Zach Neale in concert at 7:30 with Brock Wagner at 8:30, and Zach takes the stage again for a second concert at 9:15. There will also be dinner available at 6. That's at the Fox Theater in Hayes. Also on Saturday, there is an open jam with Brick Road Bartlett at Good Times Motorcycle Sales in Hayes from 1:30 to 3 p.m. And at 7:30 p.m., it's the Fort Hayes Choir's concert at Beach Schmidt Performing Arts Center on campus. I don't want to hear anybody saying there's nothing to do this weekend. That'll wrap it up. I'm your host, Jeff Liker, and this was your weekend set list.